The Kite Runner isn't just another novel. It's a cultural phenomenon that has sold over 31 million copies worldwide since its 2003 publication. This debut from Afghan-American physician Khaled Hosseini became an instant classic, spending over 2 years on the New York Times bestseller list and being translated into 70 languages. When Oprah Winfrey selected it for her book club in 2005, she called it a story that takes you from Afghanistan in the final days of the monarchy through the horrific Taliban rule and speaks to the universality of human experience. The novel's raw emotional power transcended cultural boundaries, with readers from diverse backgrounds finding themselves weeping through its pages. Its 2007 film adaptation earned Golden Globe nominations, further cementing the story's place in our collective consciousness. What makes this tale of friendship, betrayal, and redemption so universally resonant? Let's explore the haunting journey that has captured millions. In 1970s Kabul, two boys grow up side by side, yet worlds apart. Amir, the privileged son of a wealthy businessman, and Hassan, the son of their Hazara servant Ali, share childhood adventures despite the stark social divide between them. Their relationship is complicated, a friendship marked by both genuine affection and troubling power dynamics. Hassan's unwavering loyalty to Amir is his defining characteristic. "For you, a thousand times over," becomes his mantra, a promise he keeps even when Amir doesn't deserve such devotion. The boy's favorite pastime is kite fighting, a competitive sport where participants coat their kite strings with glass to cut down opponents' kites. Hassan possesses an uncanny ability to predict where fallen kites will land, making him the best kite runner in the neighborhood. When he runs to retrieve kites Amir has won, it's both an act of friendship and a reinforcement of their unequal status. Despite their closeness, Amir harbors complicated feelings toward Hassan. He's simultaneously drawn to Hassan's goodness and resentful of his father Baba's apparent affection for the servant boy. Amir secretly reads to the illiterate Hassan, sharing stories and sparking Hassan's love for tales. Yet Amir also occasionally tests Hassan's loyalty through small cruelties, exploiting the power imbalance between them. Their relationship exists against the backdrop of Afghanistan's ethnic tensions. Hassan belongs to the Hazara minority, historically persecuted by the dominant Pashtun group to which Amir belongs. Though the boys are too young to fully understand these divisions, the prejudices of their society seep into their world. Hassan faces regular discrimination and slurs from neighborhood boys, particularly from the sociopathic bully Asef, who views Hazaras with contempt. The friendship between these two boys, one privileged but emotionally neglected, the other materially poor but morally rich, forms the emotional core of the narrative. Their bond, despite its complications, represents something pure in a world increasingly defined by division. Yet, as we'll see, this childhood connection will be tested in ways neither boy could imagine, with consequences that will echo across decades and continents. Winter 1975 brings the prestigious kite-fighting tournament to Kabul, an event Amir sees as his chance to finally win his father's approval. After cutting down the last competing kite, securing victory, Amir watches Hassan run to retrieve the fallen trophy. "For you, a thousand times over," Hassan calls as he disappears down an alley. But when Hassan doesn't return promptly, Amir searches and discovers a scene that will haunt him forever. In a back alley, Hassan stands cornered by the sadistic neighborhood bully Asef and his friends. Asef demands the blue kite, but Hassan refuses to surrender Amir's prize. What follows is horrific. Asef sexually assaults Hassan while his friends hold him down. Hidden nearby, Amir witnesses everything but does nothing to help. He makes the devastating choice to run away, abandoning Hassan in his moment of greatest need. This moment of cowardice becomes the pivot point of Amir's life. When Hassan finally returns with the kite, his pants stained and torn, the boys exchange a look of terrible knowledge. Hassan knows that Amir saw and did nothing. Yet remarkably, Hassan never speaks of the incident or holds it against his friend. His loyalty remains unbroken, even as Amir's guilt consumes him. Unable to face his shame, Amir begins avoiding Hassan. The weight of his betrayal makes Hassan's continued devotion unbearable. Amir's guilt manifests his resentment toward the very person he wronged. In a final act of betrayal, Amir plants his birthday money and watch under Hassan's mattress, then accuses him of stealing. Though Hassan falsely confesses to protect Amir, Ali announces that he and Hassan will leave the household permanently. This sequence of events, the assault, Amir's failure to intervene, and his subsequent framing of Hassan, forms the central moral wound of the story. It's a betrayal that cuts across lines of friendship, class, and ethnicity. The blue kite, once a symbol of triumph, becomes instead a reminder of the moment when Amir chose self-preservation over courage, when he failed the person who would have done anything for him. The consequences of this betrayal will ripple through decades, shaping Amir's identity and driving his actions long after he leaves Afghanistan. It establishes the novel's central question: is redemption possible after such a profound moral failure? Can some sins ever truly be atoned for? Amir's relationship with his father, Baba, defines much of his childhood psychology. Baba is larger than life, a wealthy, respected businessman known for his physical strength, moral certainty, and charitable works. He built an orphanage, wrestled a bear, and stands up to Russian soldiers at risk to his own life. Yet to Amir, he remains distant and disapproving, creating a void the boy desperately tries to fill. A boy who won't stand up for himself becomes a man who can't stand up for anything, Baba once remarks, unknowingly predicting Amir's greatest failure. Baba's disappointment in his bookish, unathletic son is palpable. Amir interprets this distance as evidence that Baba blames him for his mother's death in childbirth. The kite tournament represents Amir's desperate attempt to finally earn his father's love, a motivation that contributes directly to his betrayal of Hassan. Baba's closest friend is Rahim Khan, who becomes a surrogate father figure to Amir. Unlike Baba, Rahim encourages Amir's writing and offers the validation the boy craves. "You have a gift," he tells Amir after reading his stories. These words sustain Amir through years of paternal disappointment. When the Soviet invasion forces Amir and Baba to flee Afghanistan, their relationship transforms. In America, stripped of his wealth and status, Baba works at a gas station and sells goods at a flea market. Yet in this diminished state, he maintains his dignity and principles, refusing to accept food stamps despite their poverty. Watching his proud father adapt to immigrant life, Amir develops new respect for him. The father-son relationship finds its most poignant expression when Baba develops terminal cancer but refuses treatment. Instead, he focuses his remaining energy on securing Amir's marriage to Saraya, a young Afghan-American woman. At their wedding, Amir sees his father truly happy for perhaps the first time. Only after Baba's death does Amir learn the devastating truth that reshapes his understanding of his father. Baba had his own moral failure, a secret that connects directly to Hassan's life. This revelation forces Amir to reevaluate everything he thought he knew about his father and himself. The complex legacy of Baba, his public virtues and private sins, mirrors Amir's own journey toward understanding that people can be simultaneously deeply flawed and worthy of love. When Soviet forces invade Afghanistan in 1979, Amir and Baba join thousands of Afghans fleeing their homeland. Their harrowing escape through Pakistan eventually leads them to California, where they must rebuild their lives from nothing. The transition from privilege to poverty is especially stark for Baba, who goes from being a respected businessman in Kabul to working at a gas station in Fremont. The Afghan exile community in America creates a microcosm of their homeland, a place where traditions are preserved even as they adapt to American life. At the weekly flea market where Baba sells goods, Amir observes how his countrymen cling to their cultural identity. Afghans were everywhere. Watching them, I was suddenly overwhelmed by a feeling of loss, by the enormity of what had happened and what was yet to come. For teenage Amir, America represents both opportunity and disorientation. He graduates high school and attends community college while helping Baba at the flea market. Unlike his father, who never fully acclimates to American life, Amir embraces his new identity. He transfers to San Jose State University to study creative writing and begins to pursue his long-held dream of becoming an author. The immigrant experience is captured in small, telling details. Baba's confusion at American customs, their modest apartment filled with garage sale furniture, the community's gossip networks that function just as they did in Kabul. There's both humor and pathos in these cultural collisions, as when Baba confronts the supermarket manager who asks for ID when Baba tries to pay by check. Does he think I'm a thief? I have never stolen anything in my life. Within this community, Amir meets Soraya Pahari, daughter of an exiled Afghan general. Their courtship follows traditional Afghan protocols even while taking place in California. When they marry, the wedding blends Afghan customs with their American reality, a symbolic representation of their hybrid identities. The immigrant narrative provides both contrast and continuity with the Afghanistan sections of the novel. In America, Amir finds personal success as a published novelist and builds a loving marriage, yet remains haunted by his past. The physical distance from Afghanistan doesn't diminish his guilt over Hassan. If anything, the safety and opportunity of his American life make his earlier betrayal seem even more shameful by comparison. Through this portrayal of exile, the novel explores how identity persists and transforms across borders. The Afghan community recreates what it can of home while adapting to new realities. For Amir, America offers a chance at reinvention, but true belonging remains elusive until he confronts the unfinished business he left behind in Kabul. There is a way to be good again. With these simple words spoken over a long-distance phone call from Pakistan, Rahim Khan offers Amir the possibility of redemption. The year is 2001, and Amir has built a comfortable life in America as a novelist with his wife Soraya. Yet despite his outward success, he remains haunted by his childhood betrayal of Hassan. Rahim Khan's call disrupts everything. Now elderly and ill, he asks Amir to visit him in Pakistan. Though reluctant, Amir knows he cannot refuse the man who was like a second father to him. "Come, there is a way to be good again," Rahim repeats, words that resonate with Amir's deepest need, the chance to atone for his past sins. In Pakistan, Amir learns the devastating truth. Hassan and his wife were killed by the Taliban after years of faithfully caring for Baba's house in Kabul. More shocking still, Rahim reveals that Hassan was actually Amir's half-brother, the product of an affair between Baba and Ali's wife. This revelation forces Amir to recontextualize his entire childhood. His father's distance suddenly makes sense. Baba was living with the guilt of his own moral failure, unable to acknowledge Hassan as his son while watching him grow up as a servant in his home. The final blow comes when Rahim explains why he summoned Amir. Hassan's son Sohrab, now orphaned, has been taken by the Taliban and is being held in Kabul. Rahim asks Amir to rescue the boy and bring him to safety with a charitable couple in Pakistan. "I am old and sick. This is your chance to be good again," he tells Amir. This moment represents the novel's moral crossroads. Will Amir continue his pattern of running from difficult truths, or will he finally stand up for what's right? The decision to return to Taliban-controlled Afghanistan is fraught with physical danger, but the emotional risk is even greater. By accepting this mission, Amir must confront not only the dangerous reality of his homeland under extremist rule, but also the sight of his greatest shame. The summons from Rahim Khan functions as a classic hero's call to adventure, but with profound moral dimensions. Amir's journey back to Afghanistan isn't just a physical return, but a spiritual one, a chance to face his past and perhaps find the redemption that has eluded him for decades. As he prepares to cross the border into his homeland, Amir reflects, "I had a wife who loved me, a home, a career, a family, but I was going to Afghanistan with a little suitcase of cash to rescue a boy I'd never met. Was I crazy? Maybe, but I kept seeing Hassan's face." When Amir returns to Afghanistan in 2001, he barely recognizes his birthplace. The Kabul of his childhood, with its bustling markets, tree-lined avenues, and vibrant culture, has been reduced to rubble after decades of war. First the Soviet invasion, then the brutal civil war between Mujahideen factions, and finally the oppressive rule of the Taliban have transformed the city into a wasteland of bombed-out buildings and desperate poverty. The journey from Pakistan into Afghanistan provides a stark visual representation of this decline. Amir's guide is Fareed, a bitter Afghan who initially resents Amir as a wealthy expatriate who fled while others suffered. As they drive through the countryside, Amir observes beggars with missing limbs, abandoned villages, and the absence of women in public spaces. The Taliban's strict interpretation of Islamic law has created an atmosphere of fear and repression. Amir's childhood neighborhood in Wazir Akbar Khan, once an affluent area, is now unrecognizable. The elegant homes have been reduced to barely standing single-story mud houses. When he finally reaches his father's old house, he finds it dilapidated but still standing, a bittersweet reminder of what once was. The Taliban's presence is felt everywhere. Men with beards patrol the streets, enforcing religious edicts with brutal efficiency. Public executions are conducted in soccer stadiums that once hosted sporting events. At one such halftime show, Amir witnesses the stoning of adulterers, a horrifying spectacle that underscores the regime's barbarity. Most chilling is Amir's encounter with a Taliban official who turns out to be his childhood nemesis, Asif. Now wielding power as a Taliban enforcer, Asif has institutionalized his sadism. He keeps Hassan's orphan son, Sohrab, as a dancing boy, a child sex slave, in his compound. The confrontation between Amir and Asif represents the novel's climactic moral reckoning, with Amir finally standing up to the bully he once feared, willing to sacrifice himself to save his nephew. Through these scenes, the novel provides a devastating portrait of a society under extremist rule. The Taliban's Afghanistan is depicted not as a religious utopia, but as a perversion of both Afghan culture and Islamic principles. Traditional Afghan hospitality and honor have been replaced by suspicion and cruelty. The regime's misogyny is particularly emphasized. Women are invisible, beaten for minor infractions, denied education and health care. Yet amid this bleakness, Hosseini also shows glimpses of resistance and resilience. Some Afghans maintain their dignity and humanity despite the oppressive conditions. When Amir is severely beaten by Asif, a pharmacist risks his safety to provide medical care. These small acts of courage suggest that the Afghan spirit hasn't been entirely crushed, even under the Taliban's boot. Amir's mission to rescue Hassan's son Sohrab leads him into the heart of darkness, a confrontation with his childhood tormentor Asif, now a high-ranking Taliban official. The setting is grimly appropriate. The same orphanage Baba built decades earlier, now a decrepit facility where the director sells children to the Taliban to feed the remaining orphans. Learning that Sohrab has been taken to a Taliban official's house, Amir tracks him down with the help of his driver, Fareed. What he finds is horrifying. Sohrab, dressed in makeup and bells, forced to dance for the entertainment of Taliban leaders. The boy's situation mirrors Hassan's childhood assault, creating a terrible symmetry. And the perpetrator is none other than Asif, the same person who assaulted Hassan 26 years earlier. The confrontation that follows is both physical and symbolic. Asif recognizes Amir and agrees to release Sohrab, but only after a fight. "We have unfinished business," he says, referring to their childhood enmity. Armed with brass knuckles, Asef brutally beats Amir, breaking bones and rupturing his spleen. Yet Amir finds himself laughing through the pain. There is a strange liberation in finally facing punishment for his past sins. The turning point comes when Sohrab uses his slingshot, Hassan's weapon of choice as a child, to shoot out Asef's eye, allowing Amir and the boy to escape. This moment represents poetic justice, Hassan's son using his father's skill to save Baba's son, creating a kind of balance to the earlier injustice when Amir failed to help Hassan. Severely injured, Amir drifts in and out of consciousness as Fareed drives them to safety in Pakistan. During his recovery in a Pakistani hospital, Amir begins the difficult process of building trust with the traumatized Sohrab. The boy barely speaks, damaged by his experiences with the Taliban. When Amir offers to take him to America, Sohrab asks, "Will you take me to that lake with the big fish?" referring to a story Hassan had told him about Amir's descriptions of America. This rescue sequence serves multiple narrative functions. It provides the novel's action climax while also creating a parallel to the central moral failure of Amir's childhood. This time, Amir chooses courage over cowardice, willingly suffering to protect the child, Hassan's child, from sexual abuse. The physical scars he receives, including a split lip that mirrors Hassan's hare lip, become external manifestations of his internal transformation. Yet the rescue is not a simple happy ending. Sohrab remains deeply traumatized, and the bureaucratic challenges of bringing him to America prove daunting. When Amir tells Sohrab he may need to return temporarily to an orphanage while visa issues are resolved, the boy attempts suicide, adding another layer of guilt to Amir's conscience. The novel's final section follows Amir's efforts to bring Sohrab to America and help the deeply traumatized boy rebuild his life. After Sohrab's suicide attempt, a devastating response to the prospect of returning to an orphanage, Amir maintains a bedside vigil, promising never to abandon the boy again. This commitment marks Amir's complete moral transformation from the selfish child who betrayed Hassan to a man willing to sacrifice everything for his nephew. Through persistence and the help of a human rights lawyer, Amir eventually secures permission to bring Sohrab to America. Yet their arrival in California is not the happy ending one might expect. Sohrab has retreated into silence, a defensive shell against further trauma. For over a year, he barely speaks or smiles, his psychological wounds proving far more difficult to heal than Amir's physical ones. The novel's most poignant scenes come in these quiet moments as Amir and Soraya patiently care for Sohrab, respecting his silence while gently encouraging his recovery. When Soraya teaches him to play the piano, it becomes his primary form of expression. Amir observes, "I would find him at the piano, playing a single note over and over." This image powerfully conveys both Sohrab's damaged psyche and his search for harmony. The breakthrough finally comes during an Afghan community picnic in a San Francisco park. When Amir notices some kites for sale, he purchases two and asks Sohrab if he'd like to fly one. Together, they join the other kite flyers, and Amir demonstrates the techniques Hassan taught him long ago. When they cut down another kite, Amir sees a hint of a smile on Sohrab's face, the first in more than a year. In the novel's final scene, Amir offers to run the fallen kite for Sohrab, echoing Hassan's words, "For you, 1,000 times over." As he runs after the kite, Amir feels a connection not just to Sohrab, but to Hassan and to his own childhood self. The kite becomes a symbol of continuity across generations and a bridge between past and present. This conclusion suggests that while complete healing may not be possible, some wounds leave permanent scars, there is still the possibility of redemption and new beginnings. The cyclical nature of the narrative, returning to kite flying where it began, creates a sense of completion. Yet it's not a perfect circle, it's a spiral that acknowledges both the persistence of the past and the potential for change. The novel ends on this hopeful but realistic note. Sohrab's smile is described as hardly there, but it exists, a small but significant sign that recovery is possible. Similarly, Amir's redemption is not complete or perfect, but it is genuine. Through his care for Sohrab, he honors Hassan's memory and begins to make amends for his childhood betrayal. The kite running in the final scene suggests that while we cannot change the past, we can choose to face it with courage and create a different future. Throughout The Kite Runner, personal and political histories intertwine, showing how individual lives are shaped by larger historical forces, while personal choices can have far-reaching consequences across generations. The novel spans three decades of Afghan history, from the fall of the monarchy through the Soviet invasion, civil war, Taliban rule, and beyond, paralleling Amir's personal journey from childhood to middle age. Afghanistan's political transformations directly impact the characters' lives. The 1973 coup that overthrows the king creates the first ripples of instability. When the Soviets invade in 1979, Amir and Baba are forced to flee, becoming part of a massive refugee exodus. Meanwhile, Hassan and Ali, lacking the resources to escape, remain behind to face the country's deteriorating conditions. This divergence of fates highlights how privilege determines who can escape national tragedy and who must endure it. The novel doesn't shy away from depicting Afghanistan's complex ethnic tensions, particularly between the dominant Pashtun population and the persecuted Hazara minority. Hassan's rape by Asef, who later becomes a Taliban official, symbolizes the systematic oppression of Hazaras. When Amir returns to Taliban-ruled Afghanistan, he witnesses how these historical prejudices have been institutionalized under extremist rule. Yet the novel resists simplistic political narratives. Through characters like Baba and Rahim Khan, it presents an alternative vision of Afghanistan, one of cultural sophistication, religious moderation, and ethnic tolerance. Their generation represents a more cosmopolitan Afghanistan that existed before decades of war destroyed the country's social fabric. As Rahim Khan tells Amir, the Afghanistan of our youth is long dead. Kindness is gone from the land, and you cannot escape the killings. On a personal level, the novel explores how the past continues to shape the present. Amir's childhood betrayal of Hassan haunts him into adulthood, affecting his sense of identity and worth. Similarly, Baba's secret that Hassan is actually his son influences his relationship with both boys, creating patterns of guilt and compensation that neither child fully understands. When these truths finally emerge, they force a reevaluation of the past and create new obligations for the future. The generational aspect of history is particularly powerful. Hassan's son Sohrab becomes the focal point for Amir's redemption, creating a second chance to protect someone when he failed to protect Hassan. When Amir teaches Sohrab to fly kites using techniques Hassan taught him, the novel suggests that some positive legacies can be preserved and passed down despite historical trauma. In its final pages, the novel acknowledges that history's weight cannot be entirely escaped. Sohrab remains traumatized by his experiences, and Afghanistan continues to struggle with the aftermath of decades of conflict. Yet there's also the possibility of new beginnings. Sohrab's tentative smile, Amir's hard-won self-acceptance, and the simple joy of flying kites in a park far from Kabul's ruins. History shapes but does not determine destiny. There remains space for individual agency and the possibility of breaking destructive cycles.